Welcome to Sample Size. My name is Noelle, and I'm here with my co-host, Tone.
That's me.
And on this episode of Sample Size, we're going to get into why Fashion Twitter hates Ari Fletcher, why some artists steal from younger designers and get away with it, and then we're also going to help you define what haute couture is and get into the qualifications of what actually the art form is. So, hope you enjoy the episode.
Hey, Noelle, how you doing today?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be recording this episode.
Really? Talk to me why.
Yeah, so this is going to be like our first episode where we're kind of doing more of a historical deep dive. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not just chatting this shit about whatever happened. So, of course, we're going to start out with our, you know, social media news report, insert CNN reporting noise.
You want to start with the Ari stuff first?
You can start. This is kind of, you take the lead on this.
All right, no problem. So we're going to start the episode as we usually do with, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention or you guys saw what happened lately, and we're going to talk about what happened with, Ari. For those who don't know who Ari is, I realize a lot of people don't know who she is because, you know, she's a celebrity, but
there's no reason really to know who she is.
Yeah. You know, she's famous, adjacent. There we go. That's the word I was going to use. So, recently, was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
It was last week.
Okay, because things move so quickly, I don't even realize. But last week, Ari, she's currently, she's famous because she's like Instagram famous. She's an IG model, I guess, or she's an IG.
Her real name is like Ariana Fletcher.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I just know about Ari, and I just found out her last name was Fletcher from now. But yeah, so she posted, I don't know what day it was. It was like a Wednesday or Thursday. I was just, you know, chilling. I wasn't expecting anything to happen. I thought it was just going to be a regular Thursday. I've been focusing on my workload, you know, trying to live my life properly. Mm-hmm. And then I get this notification. Somebody sent me a picture.
Me.
I don't want to put you on the spot. But I was like, oh. Because what the picture is, it's a picture of Ari. And it's like, it's her posing in a dress made by her friend. The name of the brand is House of
Travions.
Yeah, Travions, if that's how I pronounce it.
Yes.
And so she's posing, and then you just see the Vogue lettering, right? So I'm gonna just say my reaction when I saw it. I was like, "Oh, what?" Well, I was confused. Like, I was surprised and confused, mainly because I was like, "Oh, Ari's on the cover of Vogue. That's something that you wouldn't expect with Vogue. And it had nothing to do with her. It was just like, oh, Ari on Vogue. That's a surprise."
To clarify, the image that she posted had like the Vogue letterhead Photoshop behind her, mm-hmm. similar to like what would happen for someone doing their cover shoot.
Right, exactly. So I was like, "Oh, Ari on Vogue cover?" So I was confused because I was like, "Oh, and let this go," you know.
Anna
Wintour, right?
Wintour, yeah, is American Vogue, but she has her hand in all.
I thought she was head of Global Vogue. Like she leads.
I think it's American. I think she's only.
Last I checked, I think it was everything. Because I remember I was disappointed. I remember being disappointed because that meant she had a thing. But if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But yeah. But regardless, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, she's going to let this slide. And then, you know, after the initial reaction, I'm like, okay, let me see what's going on. And it, she's like, oh, thank you guys for placing. She was like, I just found out that I'm going to be in the April issue of Vogue.
Yeah.
And she's so thankful. She's so excited. I was like, oh, dang, shout out to Vogue. You know, this is different. And then comes to find out, well, through Twitter, like, oh, I guess everybody was just confused. People playing Discovery, they're like, oh, I wonder why she made it. And then there was this screenshot of a lady from British Vogue editor that said that, oh, no, you know, this was a paid placement. And then everybody was like, oh, okay. So then why is he hype? I guess it's the collective.
Yeah, so okay, let me just break this down, just give it like a little bit more clarity. Mm-hmm. So Ariana Fletcher, she is a social media model, vixen, rapper's baby mama. She posted this picture, not necessarily saying, in her caption she didn't say that she was on the cover, but she said she was excited to be in the article or in the issue or whatever, and people assume that she was on the cover because of the image she posted. And then someone made like a fake page pretending to be the one of the style editors.
I was going to put that as a twist.
Well, yeah, someone allegedly, was posing as a style editor and commented on her pictures saying, oh, we would never have someone like this on it. She's essentially lying on Vogue's name by implying that she was on the cover, et cetera, et cetera. And because Ari is kind of like a, controversial social media figure, like, because I'm biased. I love Vixens. Mm-hmm. I'm very into like the dramatic, that type of aesthetic and girl. So I don't like really get into the fact that she's a bird. A lot of people on social media don't like her because she is kind of a bird.
Word.
But yeah, the reaction on social media was expected for me, because as soon as I saw the image, I was like, ooh, the archive fashion heads, the better than yous, like I have stylist friends, so I get free pulls community is going to be pissed at this because she is not, a part of the fashion community. She's a party host.
Or at least like the fashion house community. Because, she's
Quote unquote of the Atlanta fashion community.
Exactly. We're gonna big up the
House of Fashion Nova.
Yeah. I didn't want to say, but yeah.
I'm wearing Fashion Nova right now. So I even. But yeah, so there was like a lot of shade on social media. It felt like a lot of people were going out of their way to discredit her accomplishment, or they were trying to frame it as she was like trying to lie about being the cover. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, if you read the caption, she never said she was on the cover. She posted the same Vogue challenge image that everyone else posted 3 months ago.
And that's the thing. It was just, I guess that was the reaction, because I didn't really get into how I felt about like the whole people reacting to her, because I was trying to break down the story. But yeah, that's the point of us talking about, right? It's like the way people reacted to somebody being excited about placement in Vogue.
Yeah, and
right?
To clarify, it was like her image was used.
She was modeling.
She was modeling. The dress she was modeling. We keep talking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
In the paid ad section of Vogue. So she didn't have her own spread. It was literally just like in the ad sections. But technically, she was in the print issue.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Because
what came to my mind instantly, as soon as everybody started arguing, like, oh, she paid for it. So I don't want to see anybody ever hype about being in Vogue because they weren't part of a commercial shoot.
First of all, she didn't pay for it.
Exactly, that's what I'm trying to say. So it's a commercial shoot.
Yeah.
So she's in the magazine and she's hyped. Mm-hmm. Yes, I will admit, I guess the only part that I'll say that was kind of not even wrong, but just different and made you like, okay, was the Vogue cover thing.
Yeah.
But to me, it wasn't. I mean, once you get past that, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, Vogue covers like 3 months ago.
Exactly.
And then, like, Vogue Italy decided to compile all of the online pictures. We were all excited for the people who got into the Vogue challenge.
Exactly.
It was like the what am I trying to say? Like the end goal, or like the bar for an accomplishment, especially in the fashion industry, always moves around depending on who the person was.
Right.
Because if it was like, one of Black fashion Twitter's faves who paid for a placement in Vogue, and like an up and coming conventionally skinny model was in it, we'd all be happy for her. It's like, she isn't a great person, so I can't be mad at people like clapping back at her because she is a bird. But like, why can't you be excited for the designer?
Right, exactly.
Is in Vogue.
Yeah.
And why are we even placing Vogue as like the upper echelon? Like,
exactly. That's another thing. I thought
oh, fuck Vogue. American Vogue sucks. Anna Wintour, you old bitch.
It's how quickly
the
narrative
now
changes.
That this woman who isn't deemed worthy in the eyes of the fashion industry.
It's only a certain way you have to make it in people's eyes. And
I
don't
like
that. Like,
now that she's in the magazine, it's, American Vogue is, it's so terrible. And how could they do this? How could they allow this calamity to happen? Y'all were just saying fuck Vogue the other week, so why do you care so much?
Mm-hmm.
And why do you care so much to go out of your way to create a fake profile of a British Vogue editor?
Yeah, that's, what's that about? I don't even understand.
People believed it.
Because it was a screenshot, and that's all you need to, prove
a
story.
With a profile with like 1,000
that
followers.
It says I'm British Vogue.
British Vogue editor. bio.
Oh, thank you for telling us.
Right, I'm going to put a president of the United States in my bio, and apparently I'm the fucking president of the United States.
I mean,
it just goes to show like how far people are willing to take it if you are not like a social media favorite. It doesn't matter what your accomplishments are. It doesn't matter what your actual role is. If social media doesn't like you, they're going to twist and turn that story exactly. into a fucking pretzel.
That's what's going to just be the topic of the day.
It's crazy. Like, she was just a model. She was just a model for an ad. Yeah. That's it.
I don't know. I guess a lot of people just took like the let me humble her because a lot of people be like they'll post like the spread of the placement and it's like oh this is not what it is. It's like okay, but are you in Vogue right now?
Right,
and that's all it is. Like
anytime you get a profile in some random ass mag that's only digital, we be happy as fuck for you. But nah, and that's the God thing. Forbid.
Honestly, I just you know if I believe the you know the saying that if you don't have anything nice to say, just don't say it because what is it gonna
that
do?
That doesn't exist on social media.
It doesn't.
But on the other hand, she is kind of an awful person.
True.
So
true.
Like, true. I can't go. I'm not trying to defend her. I'm just trying to defend like the principle. Like, why do we always like change the fucking threshold for accomplishment?
Oh, I just remember another thing that probably that because I also said it's only one thing that Ari wasn't wrong for was the Vogue. I think they were also wrong for not being creative with the ad
because it was literally the Cardi B Bizarre.
Yeah, so that's another reason why I was confused.
That's
was
not even on her. That's on the creative director of the show.
Yeah, exactly. True. But still, that whole career, like the, I guess another thing, execution. I mean, I'm not trying.
Oh, it was Billboard. It wasn't Harper's Bazaar.
Yeah, it was Billboard. I'm not trying to victim blame here, but yeah, that execution.
Not victim blame. It's not a single victim in this story. It's a girl who's rich as hell for being pretty with a big butt, and then people who are mad on social media. It's no victims in this story.
Nah, you're definitely right. I guess you know.
People stop calling her Thomas the Train because it hurts my feelings too.
People call her Thomas the Train.
What? Because she has a round face.
Oh no!
And as the leader of the Round Face Girls Committee, I'm offended. So
not
stop
Thomas
calling
the
her
train.
That. I'm insulted.
Oh no, that's funny actually.
She was so
I'm just picturing her right. So you can't rude. You can't even not laugh.
Oh
like,
my god,
Thomas the Train.
Oh my god, that shit is so people are so mean on social media. Okay, so that is our first bit of fashion Twitter timeline news. Our second issue.
We gotta really think of a name for a segment.
Fashion Twitter timeline news is pretty fucking accurate if we're being
fashion
honest.
Fashion Twitter timeline. FTTFN.
No. We gotta workshop that acronym.
Yeah, we'll come back with something.
okay, so our second piece of news.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you're gonna have to take the lead on this because if you don't have anything positive to say, don't say anything at all.
True.
So that's my position.
We're really about to be helicopter.
About to blackmail ourselves right from any industry
and
connections.
Like, and it's not even like a different episode. I mean, it's just same. But regardless. It's not even. Why would we blackmail when it's what it is? It is what happened, right? So just to give a little context of what we're talking about. Mm. The crazy thing is that, you know, we weren't really going to talk about it, but, like, I don't know.
I'm openly afraid to talk about this.
No, it's not. I mean, nobody listens
fuck
to
it,
us. Fuck it. Yeah, nobody listens to us. So, what was I say? I don't even know. Wait, okay. I'm going to. How do you say her name? Moa Lola, right?
Don't ask me. I'm going to get it wrong. I'm bringing up the other girl's profile.
Yeah, Moa Lola. Moa Lola. All right. Okay. So we're going to get into it. The topic is what happened with this small... Oh, dang. Do you have her name? I don't remember her name.
She goes by Video Girls
on
Twitter.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, another day, just minding my business on, you know, doing my thing, mm-hmm. being the outstanding citizen that I am, I get a notification about, was it even a notification? It was a notification, right?
It was me. Oh, my fault. Ambassador of messy shit, yes.
I'm not trying to paint a picture or anything.
It is
but
what it is. I'm an observant, messy person.
True,
a Libra. Yes,
you know,
I
that's,
am.
That's what you're here for. I'm just here to judge with you. But, so Video Girl on Twitter, she posts,
she's a small independent designer, does uh-huh. a lot of like rave and like vixen neon inspired work.
And then she decides that, you know, she wants to come out about what happened with her and where she was planning on collaborating with designer Moa Lola. I believe is how you pronounce it. I always read things, but I never pronounce things out loud until you.
Yeah,
it
I
wasn't until
it
you have
Lola,
a podcast
so
that you realize that you can't pronounce shit for real. Because it'd be like, oh, you pronounce it differently in your head and you say it out loud. People are like,
Yeah.
So don't hold us to it, but Moa Lola, I believe that's how you pronounce it. I'm sure of that. She was collabing about a, how do you want to describe it? It's like fuzzy, very bright and vibrant.
It was like a cowboy hat that was covered in like this zebra printed fuzzy material. It's very like raver girl, you know, with the fuzzy leg coverings and that type of aesthetic.
So, yeah, so she posted screenshots of her discussing and showing her samples that she had created for her whole thing, and she was interested in collaborating with Moa Lola. And, you know, as a young, independent woman designer trying to make it, you know, she's, you know, shooting a shot, and, you know, in this instance, she gets a response. And then, you know, Moa Lola is excited, and, you know, they're talking about, oh, this hat is cool. You know, this is definitely something that I want to produce, and can you send more samples?
Yeah.
And then she says that somewhere down the line that it just goes radio silent. She doesn't hear anything from Moa Lola. And then, you know, little does she know, she sees promotion for a hat that looks eerie, similar to something that they were discussing, come to find out, you know, that she thinks – I mean, not she thinks, but, you know, Moa Lola stole the idea and was going to freeze out of, you know, continue the process. You know.
It's literally the same colorway. Like,
yeah,
same
like it's
material.
Not even, the colors aren't really unique, different in terms of, you know, we caught you in 4K. Like, that. Yeah. Like,
and the girl has, like, all of the receipts of
yeah,
the
and that's
conversation
the thing too.
And of them actually planning a collaboration where they're discussing different colorways for this hat. I want to say Moalia so bad.
No, it's not Moalia.
Moa Lola is inviting this girl to her studios to work, and then, you know, it goes, as you said, it goes silent, and then boom, she pops up with promotional images of essentially the same design.
Yeah, so now it's you know, is I mean, like Nora was saying, there's really nothing that it's not an argument here. It's
yeah.
like,
and it's not even a real, it's not even like a new story because we've
honestly,
we've,
yeah.
I feel like, and recently we've seen a lot of this happening where small creatives are making these like good faith deals with designers that they look up to. And
right.
then, you know, 3 to 5 weeks later, boom, the bigger designer
yeah.
has basically stolen their whole flow.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's only like two things I really want to touch on. Mm-hmm. It's probably more, but like just on my top of my mind right now is that, I mean, I guess initially what I was shocked only because, you know, I always like view like black women supporting black women, and you know, I'm the person that's always optimistic in the world. Excuse me, optimistic in the world. So just to see something like that, it's just like, you know, as a black woman, we I'm at least I'm aware that, you know, it's hard. No, not me, not me being that. No. No, I didn't mean it like that.
No. As a strong black woman.
No, not me being a black woman. No. Excuse me. What I meant is I know a lot of black women, and I hear that, you know, it's a struggle to, you know, just advance in society, just in general. There's a lot of the intersectionality of the discrimination that black women face for their skin color and then for their gender. So it's just like, you know, there's usually a bond that black people usually share, and then black women in general usually share amongst each other in regards
especially
to sticking to
in
each other, right?
Marginalized spaces.
And
like
then
that.
Exactly like fashion. Yeah. And just like this is an opportunity to, you know, build a bridge. Exactly.
Girl, yeah.
And then, you know, you never know what she might turn into because you wanted to give her just even like a collaboration.
Literally
even
a shout
that's
out.
It. Not even a shout out. Definitely
no,
don't, more than a shout out.
A shout out.
I mean, I guess.
That's what Guacol against Medical Advice.
Okay.
He literally built a brand off of a shout out, essentially.
Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely a shout out. You know, I'll take a shout out. But the point is that, you know, this is something that she wanted to put into production. So why not bring her in into doing it? And then just to, like, go ice cold is like, oh, damn. Like, it's just crazy. Because imagine, like, she never, like, brought it to light. And I think the young lady described saying that, you know, she had mental health issues as a result, you know, because, you know, something that you work so hard off just quickly ripped off, and then you don't want to come off as a pest because you want to bring to light the troubles and traumas that you face.
Right.
So that was what was disappointing part to me, one. And then, I don't know if you want to say, because I don't want to keep speaking, because I do have another point, yeah.
Okay, first I'm going to read Moa Lola's, like, response to the girl.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, After the thread went viral, she responded on Twitter and said, "Firstly, I would like to apologize for the trauma this whole experience has caused you. I already know how difficult it can be to run your own business, and I would never want to add negatively to that. In terms of the hat, I'm really sorry for not communicating with you. Yeah, it wasn't intentional. Also, I will not be selling the hat."
Thank you.
That, like, okay, that shit is so annoying to me because it's like, okay, why the fuck wouldn't you just continue with what you were supposed to do
and then give her some,
sell the hat and give her bread?
Yeah, because
like,
now she's
what,
like,
type of fucking apology is that?
It's like a passive aggressive ego thing. It's
exactly
a smooth thing, yeah.
It felt like very ungenuine and ego based, and like a lot of people were like, on one hand it's like, okay, even like in any situation where you're doing business, you should not be going based on good faith deals, because it doesn't matter, like, you know, people in high places with the same skin color as right. you are going to align with the high place instead of the skin tone.
Mm-hmm.
So you should not be doing good faith deals. Don't trust none of these people. Creatives, big creatives, again yeah. and again and again, have stole from young, you know, underprivileged creatives. But in this case where it's like a black woman to black woman, and it's someone, like, obviously that the video girl looked up to,
mm-hmm.
there's probably, like, admiration
right.
and, like, a sense of kinship where she thought, okay, we're one, you know, mm-hmm. black woman to black woman. She's
and that was
not
a
gonna
mistake,
fuck me
yeah.
over. Exactly. So I see why, like, it would be easy to get caught up in the conversation and the exchange of ideas instead of, like, immediately cementing a hard contract.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know how old the video girl is, that creator is, but she looked young. So
right.
it seems like a simple mistake. So I don't think people should be, like, you know,
this
shading her.
And
like, oh, you deserved it because you didn't do X, Y, and Z. People are young. They, you know, they don't know better.
Yeah, because you're just trying to get that in, man. You're gonna,
yeah.
And that's another, that's a true fear, like, as a creative. It's like, you know, you always fear that if you don't have the power, you don't want to lose the opportunity. But that's
exactly.
another thing. You have to just realize that, you know, if you lose the opportunity, you lose the opportunity. It wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
Because as you can see, there's this potential, and what can happen is that you get fucked over.
Yeah.
And that's what happened, you know.
It was just so, yeah.
yeah.
I didn't want to talk about it, honestly, because it pissed me off so much because I saw so many people who built their platforms off of supporting black creatives, particularly, like, in fashion, in media, shade this girl and be like, oh, well, she should have did this, that, and the other. And, oh, well, her hat wasn't even unique. There are rave party hats, you know, all over the world, da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, people are so, to me, a lot of, like, the camaraderie in the industry is so, like, you did this for brand building purposes.
Right.
Because when it comes down to it and we see an instance of a popular creator fucking over a new creator, you always align with that popular creator.
Of course.
Like, you retweet the girl's thing and, oh, you know, I'm sorry. And then 3 days later, not 3 days later, but like,
I mean, 3 days later, I promise you,
people
already forgot.
Still shaming
yeah.
her. And it's yeah. crazy to me, like, you, that people build their platforms off of, you know, support black business and
right.
support black creatives and respect black creatives. So instead of shading them on Twitter, why the fuck are you not coaching the girl?
Right, exactly.
Why
and
are you
that,
not
I mean,
telling her, like,
and that's the thing,
processes?
Not everybody's built like that. Like, and that's, the, you know, the argument. Do we, who, like, whose responsibility is
yeah.
it is to progress? But, and that's where I'm not going to go, okay, like, yes, you always want to put people, you're, well, at least I believe that you should always support people, especially like-minded and, you know, people who look like you.
Yeah.
But, you know, say you don't want to support her. My thing is just then don't steal the idea. Don't try to make it
right.
seem like it's something that's yours.
And
that's,
yeah, and don't be like, oh, well, you know, the fuzzy party
it.
Hats have been a thing for decades. Okay,
yeah, and then
like,
it was
well,
just
well,
like,
she stole this
yeah.
fuzzy party hat in particular.
Yeah.
The same colors.
Exactly.
So what the fuck are you talking? You trying to justify shit after the fact because you want a fucking trucker hat.
And then,
stop it.
And then all
I hate
of, like,
that
friends
shit.
Is, like, gaslighting and shit. It's just, like, tapping.
That's
it.
Crazy.
Just,
but you know
me,
what?
Yeah.
That she don't make... Never mind.
That feels like that was important. See, we needed to get that off your chest, right?
I'm
at least partially.
I said what I needed to say as tactfully as possible.
And I appreciate that. That's what we call media training, right?
Right. I'm good at it.
This is how we learn, right?
I'm very tactful.
You say what you want to say, but in a way that, you know,
mm-hmm.
what did you really say?
Yeah, either way, just.
You got to really deep it.
You know, for the young creatives, don't, these motherfuckers.
Like, we're not young creatives.
Like, well, shit.
Go ahead, continue.
Shit, if, I don't know who, like, if Christopher John Rogers slid in my DMs, then I absolutely would be sending him my email address so we could conduct business there. But, like, for people who possibly don't know that, just always make sure you get shit down in writing. And, like, unfortunately, Instagram DMs do not count as, like, official contracts. So
at all.
Get that shit airtight, you know, legally, contractually, exactly. Yeah. So just make sure.
Even just writing, just not Instagram DMs. If at the very least,
screenshot,
like,
everything.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. And, like, make it seem like, make it seem clear as hell that I'm talking
send
in terms
that shit,
here.
Yeah.
Exactly. But at that point, if you're going to be talking all legalese, you got to then just paperwork it and stuff. So, I mean,
gotta protect your neck.
Yeah, that's what it is. IPs, people still IP, and then, and I mean, I guess that's
and
also.
Stop telling designers to trademark shit. You know how hard it is
to
fucking
and,
trademark a design.
And you know what's actually interesting, right? Because I don't know if you've been paying attention to just the world bubble in general, but there's been a lot of talk about NFTs. And I'm not trying to make it nerded out, but just I was just thinking, like, how I wonder how that would play. In something like that, in terms of, like, trademark and IP.
I feel like
IP.
That's definitely, we should, like, wrap that up into, like, a different episode.
No, yeah, we don't got to talk about it now. I was just, like, I was just thinking about it, and I just thought that's an interesting thing in terms of, like, how do you copyright design and stuff, especially now. And that could be a way, honestly, especially with IP. So I'm going to do my little research and maybe.
If that shit isn't already completely overvalued.
Yeah.
Because motherfuckers making $1 million off of Logan Paul opening baseball cards, and that's an NFT that went for thousands of dollars. So,
a finesse is gonna finesse. I always support people finesse, man.
I don't know.
Just as long as you do it properly and, you know, finesse all the ways. So, that's, you know, we just want to get that off our chest a little bit.
I think that's
talk
the
about
wrap
that
for our, what is it, fashion Twitter timeline?
Yeah, FTTN FN.
Network. Okay. FTTN Network, sure. Okay.
Nah, we'll figure it out. But yeah.
All right.
Okay. So let's get into the main topic of, you know, this episode. And, you know, you gave them a little teaser earlier. So I hope you guys are ready to, you know, learn a little bit. I'm excited to learn.
Yeah.
I don't know nothing about couture.
Couture.
You see, I don't even know how to pronounce it, you know.
Yeah,
so, you
strap
know,
on your, you
I'm
know.
Definitely, let me pull out my notebooks, take my notes. I guess
caps.
Classes in session. And, you know, do your thing.
So we thought that with Fashion Month being over and obviously Couture Week being included in that, we would want to start out our first, like, deep dive episode with kind of just a high-level explanation of what the art of couture is.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to make this as accessible and non-lectury as possible because it is so easy to fall down the rabbit hole of, like, all of these technical definitions and the history, and it is a very rich and storied art form. So if you are interested in
I'm excited
in any way, we definitely encourage you to do more research.
I know you're very
it.
Passionate about the topic, so I know you were having fun doing all the, you know, making sure you got
I wouldn't say fun, but it was definitely it was definitely fun to revisit some of the collections that made me interested in fashion in the first place. So basically, you know, with social media popularity and everyone becoming a designer, which nowadays people are more of graphic designers than they are of traditional designers, the art and history and meaning of couture has kind of been lost, especially with, like, the industry, especially with the industry's shift towards streetwear and more minimal aesthetics, because basically that's what sells. There's a lot of, like, definitions and actual processes that have been lost to time.
Right.
So before I get into, like, the actual history, we're going to play a little bit of a Q&A game with you.
Yeah, okay. Well,
so
what,
we can kind of get.
Is it I'm answering or I'm going
to
be asking?
You have to answer these questions to the best of your abilities. Because we want to set, like, a base level understanding of, like, what someone who doesn't, you know, do Tumblr deep dives knows of couture.
All right, you about to embarrass me, but fuck
no,
it.
No, it's not. This is a learning opportunity.
Yeah, don't worry. You know, already put my disclaimer out, so.
Yeah, you're off the hook.
Hopefully.
So, first question, easy. What is couture?
I don't know exactly what couture is, to be honest. I know it's, like, just basically, when I hear couture, I think high level, like pins and needles, fashion design, clothes wear. So I think really, I don't know, instantly I think like old English like imageries instantly. Yeah. That's what I think of. I think like Princess Diaries type stuff.
Gigantic dress.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, you know, you gotta be in your harness, you know, you're gonna need like somebody.
Harness. Okay.
What did I say?
You mean like corset and like
Corset. See, I don't even know the terms.
Petticoat.
Or like corset and like, you know, you need somebody to help. Like making sure that you're getting dressed. Basically, how all the princes and queens get dressed in the crown.
20 different layers.
Exactly.
Of clothing,
and people helping you out. That's what I think about when I think of couture.
Not too far off, because that's kind of where it started.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So talk to me, tell me.
Okay. No. You're not done with the quiz.
I thought it was off me.
So,
oopsie doopsie.
In terms of like customers and like monetary gain, what is the significance of the haute couture customer to the fashion industry?
I mean, if I'm going off the same like luxury imagery, is like I'm assuming it started like sometime like old. I'm not even thinking like 19. I'm thinking like 17 somethings or 16 something. So it had to do probably with like the kings and queens or the noble men and women that, you know, we're getting up and dressing up to go to the balls. And then, you know, once you start doing that, you want to flex. You know, you want to be like, you want to start again, I got the latest couture piece from, you know, Louis Vuitton or something like that, or from this designer. Or if they have fashion shows, they were showing off their couture pieces. So that's what I think in terms of, like, customers. It's meant to, like, okay, I'm flexing in, like, in whatever high class.
Okay. So I was, when I wrote the question, I was thinking more in terms of economics.
Oh, yes.
And I'll just answer this one now in case I don't get it into the history. So worldwide, there's only about 4,000 couture customers.
Okay.
So 4,000 people in the entire globe.
And it's, like,
that are
over 6 billion people.
Of couture. So I don't even know what that percentage is. It's a lot of zeros in that percentage. But yeah, basically, there are only 4,000 people on this earth who can afford to have these couture garments.
Oh, wow. 4,000. Yikes.
Yeah. So, next question. What qualifications does a collection or a house have to meet to be considered couture?
I think you have to declare, one, this is the couture.
Okay. You just self-declare. Sure.
And then, two, I don't know, you have to, like...
Fuck tradition.
No, but seriously, you have to, like, seam it. Like, everything needs to be from... I mean, I guess all fashion is from the beginning, but I really don't... Okay, I don't know. Let me not...
A lot of y'all fashions be from the screen printer.
Okay, let me not... I was gonna, like, try to draw it out, but I don't know.
Okay, next question. I'll answer that in the history section. So
no problem.
This is already, I already know the answer is no. Can you name any black couturiers?
Yeah.
Name them. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Elaborate.
Yeah, that person. Yeah. Okay. No, I can't name any. I'm sorry.
You were failing this quiz. You have a 0 out of 0.
Thought we weren't judging. Come on.
I am.
Look how quick
next
they switch.
Next question. What does the white coat symbolize?
When you become a doctor? No.
Yes, but I'm talking about in terms of
fashion. I mean, I guess, joking aside, like, it's like, okay, this is the lead person at this couture house, or like the lead designer, the lead couturist.
Not necessarily the lead person, even though the head does also wear a white coat. A white coat is basically, when I get into the qualifications, all of the people who are actually doing the hand sewing and the dip dyeing and on the embellishments.
Oh, okay.
All of couturiers, the people who actually
that's
wear
what the term couturiers
wear the traditional white coat.
Oh, okay.
For context, Matthew Williams is the head of Givenchy, who is a couture house, a traditional couture house. That motherfucker does not wear a white coat.
I didn't know that.
Because he don't know what the fuck he's doing. And he was actually asked about it. There's an amazing black fashion historian. Her name is Shelby. I don't want to butcher her last name on Twitter. She actually asked him in an interview or like a one-on-one conversation why he doesn't wear a white coat. And he didn't have an answer. So, you know, this motherfucker, my Matthew Williams rant is incoming, okay? Like, I have a rant about that man and why we're just giving positions to white men because they have an audience or because they're friends with Playboy Cardi. But that is not the topic of this episode. Okay, last question of the quiz. who is currently and historically, I believe, the biggest couture house. And you can throw out a name and you might be right. It's like the obvious answer.
I want to say Versace, but I know that's wrong. Not the the no. one answer is either no. what, Gucci?
No.
Louis Vuitton.
You naming all of these houses that started like in the fucking 60s. You know, like,
oh, right,
couture
right, right.
houses started way back in the day.
I'm not thinking. Oh, damn. Way back in the day.
Chanel. Oh, my God.
Oh, true.
You know Karl Lagerfeld was alive for 300 years.
No, you're right. I was just thinking like recently, I was like, you know when it's like an easy question on a test and you're like, you overthink it.
Yeah.
That's what happened. No, definitely Chanel.
Chanel is the biggest couture house. Okay.
Oh, true. That makes sense.
So let's get into what.
Just to confirm, that was a 0 out of 0.
That was
that
a means 0 out of 10.
I didn't get any question right.
You did fail that quiz, for sure.
I'll come back. I'll drop.
I don't know if you can come back. I'll drop the class and start again next semester. Okay, so. Let's get into the actual history and definitions of couture.
Okay.
So, couture is actually French for dressmaking, and haute is French for high. So, basically, high-end dressmaking is the technical definition, and this is a trigger warning. We're going to butchering these French names.
Oh, okay,
we're
going to
be fucking these names up.
Horribly.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you know, I once took French, but...
Yeah, for some reason I thought you could speak French.
Ask me the last time I spoke some French. Yeah, okay. But yeah, we're gonna see. We're gonna talk about it. I'm a fake pretend, but who knows?
Okay, so in the 19th century, there was this English dude. He was a couturier, basically a dressmaker for the high nobility, very rich, wealthy women's. His name is Charles Frederick Worth. And he is considered the father of haute couture, even though the actual term haute couture wasn't like minted until 1908.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically,
and what was Charles? When is this era?
19th century. So that was like the 1800s.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, his whole deal was he was like a champion for like exclusive luxury fashion for upper class women, and he actually coined the term fashion designer.
Ooh.
Which
Charles
was
Frederick. Shout out to you.
Yeah, like, and he basically distinguished it was like there are dressmakers and then there are people who make fashion. There are people who make wearable art.
He said, I'm different.
Yeah, he basically said, sorry, y'all niggas, but I'm different.
I respect it.
And he was built different. Like, there's a lot of obviously capitalism and class warfare and all of that great stuff is embedded into this very deeply. But we're just here for the dresses.
Yeah.
You know, of those 4,000 people who actually shop couture, you have to be invited to those shows. You can't just be.
You can't just like, you just can't have the money.
Exactly. You can't even just be like, you can't even be new money wealthy. You have to be old money wealthy. You have to be your family has to be a friend. Like,
people
of
just
the
got
brand.
Don't. You're just going to be not known.
Exactly.
Nobody knows who you
exactly.
are, but
like,
you're that
none
person.
None of these new money people.
The person that is responsible for the chairs are sitting on the table,
exactly.
sitting, and you never
Nobody
know.
Nobody who just made $1 million off of, a fucking
NFT.
Reddit. I was about to say, AMC Reddit bet is not going to be invited to a couture show. So sorry. Like, they play that classism game to a different level. Like, and so
say
you get invited. You are... basically a friend to the fashion house who are invited, and it's essentially a shopping experience. So you're invited to these shows with the expectation that you're going to be like, okay, look, 2, 3, and 4, love those, need it taken in at the waist, I'm a little tall.
So when do you even wear it? Okay, I'll let you continue.
What do you wear? You usually wear like...
No, I'm saying like, where do you wear the stuff that you buy? Is it just to have? Is just like...
What, that show on Netflix. What's the name of that show?
Oh, Crazy Rich Asians. No, that's not it.
That's the name of the movie.
Yeah.
That the show is based off of. Basically, to
I don't remember
galas,
name.
Galas, event, charity events, which, come rich people. Like, charity events, galas, correspondence dinners, events like that.
Mm.
They might be wearing them in the house, too, at this point.
Okay.
But yeah, so, and even if you see something at a show you like, the tailoring and the customization is included in the purchase.
Okay.
So you can say, you know, I like look 12. You book your appointment. You actually go to the, like the ground or the studio of the couture house, and you know, all the people in their white coats will come out, and they will tailor it to your body and make any adjustments you like. So you have a literally one of one art piece to wear. Mm. So that's kind of just the purchasing process.
That's flexing different.
Exactly. So it's like when you start studying couture, like your perspective of wealth is completely shifted.
Okay.
Like us little niggas making a couple hundred dollars on Robinhood feeling like we're doing something is nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. We couldn't even sweep the fucking, you know, the grounds where they do the couture shows at. It's insane. Okay, so let's get into the actual qualifications to be a haute couture house. Mm-hmm. So basically, anyone can put out a quote-unquote couture collection.
There's See, I was right. I got that one right.
You can throw couture on anything, and we've seen this actually this season. There was that brand. Shit, I should have Googled it. There was that brand who basically right put out a couture collection. You also have a computer right in front of you.
Okay, go ahead. Continue.
They put out a couture collection that was basically like athleisure wear, and it was like.
What do I have to type? Couture athleisure?
I mean, you might. You can probably couture 2020, 2021 collection casual athleisure wear, and you might be able to find it. But the point is, you have to qualify to be a couture house.
Mm. I see couture active.
So everyone can call it couture, but you're not really couture.
Okay.
So to qualify to be an official haute couture house, members must design made-to-order clothes for private clients, which are those 4,000 people we were discussing,
mm-hmm.
with more than one fitting, using an atelier, which is the workshop that they work in,
mm-hmm.
and they must employ at least 15 full-time staff members. So those 15 staff members at minimum.
Oh, that's actually not that bad. I thought it was going to be something crazier, but continue, I'm sorry.
No, but it's like, you can't just pull Tom, Joe, and Buck off the street.
Oh, okay,
these
you have to be like.
These are trained, experienced seamstresses, the top of their game, and those 15 people are the ones wearing the white coats.
Oh, okay, got you.
And then, on top of that, they also must have 20 full-time technical workers in one of their workshops. So, they're the people, you know, it'll be like the hedge seamstress, and then like her pod of like, 7 underlings that mm-hmm. do all of the like mundane work,
okay.
where she makes all of like the big decisions for how something fits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then finally, a haute couture collection or no, an haute couture house must present a collection of no less than 50 original designs for both day and evening garments to the public every season in January and July. So, 50.
So it has to be new designs every time?
Every single time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then couture collections, minimum is 50, but you'll see shows that have up to like 80, 90 looks.
Mm-hmm.
This is a huge undertaking. It takes up a lot of time, energy, material, a lot of capital. And a lot of these designs obviously never get put into production. So that's why like archive couture pieces are considered so valuable and are often only able to be viewed in museums, because museums often are the only place institutions that have the like temperature conditions in order to maintain the garment.
Mm.
Yeah. Because it's like, you know how Birkins have to be kept in like a Birkins, in order to keep or increase their value, have to be put in like
humidifiers,
basically in like a pressure controlled, temperature controlled room.
It costs so much to be rich, golly.
The maintenance. It's like when you buy a fucking Bentley, where like the price is one thing, but the price of upkeep is like a whole nother level.
Yeah, that's what people don't tell you about.
So those are some of the traditional qualifications of a couture house. It sounds simple almost on paper, but then you also have to consider
how long the trainings are in terms of like to be Italian. No, that's a place.
In terms of being like one of the people who
that wears the white coat, that good bitch.
A Lifetime?
Lifetime.
Those are one of those careers where you were born into it. It's not, you can't go to...
So to be in a house, your average age is probably like 40s, 50s versus like not really any young people doing it, right?
Like the actual seamstress. There are young heads of couture houses. Again, Matthew Williams is not that old.
Oh, okay.
But to be one of the actual people who have their hands on the garments, it's usually women.
Mm,
and they are usually like middle age to like 60 years old. It's something that you are born into. You're born into that system. You're taught that knowledge from people who are around you from a youth.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Got you.
So like you can't go to like FIT. I mean, you can go to FIT and... become
FIT didn't deserve that.
I have a lot of friends that go to FIT.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Shout out to FIT. FIT's a great school.
They sitting home listen to the podcast.
You can't be what some fucking green haired girl in Brooklyn who took a couple classes at FIT and become a couturier. And yeah, no shade because I'm a red haired girl from the Bronx. So,
but continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So basically, oh my God, I'm so afraid of this. The name of this organization. Okay. So the official haute couture organization that like certifies these houses.
You know it's serious when you gotta clear your throat.
Yeah. It's the Fédération de la Couture et de la Mode.
That was even bad.
Yeah. Yeah, because I know those words individually. So we're good.
I don't even wanna see it. I'm trying to see so I can try to see if I could pronounce it.
Yeah, some of the other names that I didn't include on this list are wild. Yeah, so that is the official organization that certifies the couture houses. Some of the current members, and you can fall like in and out of qualification.
Oh, okay.
Excuse me, like, it's not a thing. I think you have
people
to.
People got to be financial.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, you have to be financial. A financial member, yeah, and you have to be active in your chapter of the Fédération de la Couture et de la Mode. Some current members include Alexandre Voltaire, Chanel, Dior, Giambista, Valli, Givenchy, Jean-Claude.
Just skip the ones that you can at least attempt.
Yeah, I'm not attempting. We will include the link in the episode description. I'm just saying the ones that I know how to say.
At least try to, right?
Givenchy, somehow, I really feel like they are going to not qualify again. Okay. Because of Matthew Williams, Jean-Paul Gaultier, Margiela, Schiaparelli, Versace, Victor and Rolf, and Iris Van Herpen, which is a fave of mine. They also have different, like, tiers to the membership.
I was going to say, Amari?
Okay, because I put the interesting guest members in the interesting sections for a reason, because there's different tiers. There's the current members, there's like the guest members, and then there's one more tier. Let me just double check.
Yeah, because you got Amari, Conde Garcon.
It's Amiri.
Amiri?
It's Amiri.
Amiri. Amiri, Amiri.
Yes. Okay, so there are the current haute couture members.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's correspondent members and guest members. So
do you know the difference between those?
No, because this website is in French and I can't read it. French speaker.
I'm not even going to attempt it. You put me on the pressure. I already did my pressure cooker thing earlier. So, you know.
So some correspondent members, also let's just throw them in there as well. Azzedine Alaya, who that makes sense because they were much bigger in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Giorgio Armani Privé, that makes sense. Fendiana does not make sense to me because Fendi.
I thought you were about to say Fenty.
They would never. They don't.
Wait, they're not even in production anymore. I forgot. We just had an episode about
that. Yeah. So let me just retract my statement. Valentino and Iris Van Herpen and Versace are correspondent members, which doesn't make sense to me because Iris Van Herpen and Valentino have been putting out some of the most traditionally couture collections I've seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's cool. I'm not a part of the Federation. Some guest members, which I think is the most interesting tier, include Alix Studios, which is Matthew Williams' original brand, Mike Amiri, is also a correspondent member. Comme des Garçons is a correspondent member, mm-hmm. which is interesting because Comme is known for destructing or deconstructing silhouettes. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I don't know if you watched a Comme show, but you'll see
not anyone recently, but
a staple of their collections are like these huge, like almost boulder like silhouettes, mm-hmm. and it's unwearable clothing. And an aspect of couture is unwearable, intimidating garments that question whether or not, like, the definition of clothes.
Right.
So it's surprising to me to see that they are in a category with a Mike Amiri.
Mm-hmm. I think this probably has to do with how you pay, because some of these brands are not making sense to me.
And then possibly, I'm thinking also a lot of, Comda isn't putting out a, 50 look collection. Amiri is not putting out a 50 look collection. When was the last time A-Look Studio put out a collection that wasn't a belt drop?
I don't even know. Yeah, that's why it has to be something. There has to be a reason. Maybe it's so you can start the timer, and then as you grow, you have to start being more.
We're gonna actually do our due diligence and follow up on our Instagram about that.
Yeah.
Cool. Other honorable mentions. Botere, which we talked about mm-hmm. on our Grammy, which I talked about. Side note, if you're interested in the lost files of our Grammys review, you can find essentially the same thing on my TikTok at Yano. we were cursed, and that's the only explanation we have for that.
Yeah, a lot of stuff happens behind the scenes that you're not privy to until you're privy to, man.
A very stressful 48 hours. And then also shout out to, I don't want to say this wrong, but Gaupei, Gaupei.
Yeah, I mean, you're trying it. Your intent is good. So
they are infamous for the yellow gown that Rihanna wore to.
Oh, okay.
What's the name of the event? I'm forgetting it.
Met Gala.
To the Met Gala, the showstopper, gigantic train, scrambled egg, was like a billion pounds. It was super heavy. That is like the pinnacle of couture.
Mm-hmm.
Like to the point.
Okay, that makes sense. Then,
it's a garment where it's to the point of being damn near unwearable.
Okay.
Because it's just so grand and intricate.
Grandiose.
Which I think was, it's so crazy because all of their collections are.
In terms of who are you talking about?
Gaupei?
Okay.
Guipei.
I think it's Gaupei.
Gaupei, I think. All of their collections are to that level of intricacy and extravagance. Mm-hmm. So it's just surprising to see these qualifications where you have a brand like A-Lick Studios, which is essentially just like a hyped up streetwear brand,
mm-hmm.
be in line with these other designers that are making like arresting clothing. So
when you say arresting, what do you mean?
Because like it's visually arresting. Like when you saw Rihanna on that red carpet, that shot of her going up the stairs and her train is covering all those stairs. That's some shit that makes you, you know, it makes you catch your breath. Like I don't feel that way when I look at a fucking industrial seatbelt belt.
Seatbelt.
I don't like A-Look Studios.
I see. That's what I was
in case you haven't
keep
noticed.
Coming back to
them. I'm so confused at how the man known for making seatbelt belts is at the head of Givenchy.
Sometimes you gotta expand. You know how it goes.
Or you just want more black people to buy your clothes, and you know that he's friends with Playboi Carti.
I mean, I don't know.
Whatever.
Yeah, you go ahead.
You know? All I'm saying is Givenchy, I hope y'all bring the shark boots back. Matthew May Williams, if you do one thing correct, bring the shark boots back, please. Okay. So that is our very high level overview of what couture is. Again,
I learned a lot.
Yeah.
Embarrassed myself. So it was
worth it. No, I mean, a lot of people have assumptions of what it is. You know, they think, they see like, you know, Naomi Campbell in a glittery gown on a runway.
And you didn't even talk about your favorite, some of your favorite, like, couture designers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to get into that, for sure. But that's just, like, the history section of our broadcast. A lot of people, if you are a Tumblr nerd like me, you are familiar with couture collections because they used to go crazy on Tumblr all the time. Like, if you've been anywhere,
I said before, I was slow on Tumblr, so I didn't miss all of the trendy stuff.
Yeah, so Tumblr is where I found out about Thierry Mugler, who is my favorite designer of all time. He is my king. And then Alexander McQueen, RIP, you know, too good for this world. So some important haute couture collections that basically define fashion. We have the Christian Dior New Look collection, which came out in 1947. Basically, this collection redefined the women's silhouette. So it was, it's probably most recognizable as... 1947, Jesus. Yeah. It was probably most recognizable as, like, the ballerina silhouette, where you had a very nipped waist, and then you have a skirt that juts out and is almost ankle length, but it's stuffed with, like, I don't know how they stuffed it to make it not fall to the body, but it goes out, I think it's maybe, like, a tulle or maybe even some type of petticoat underneath to... make that fit and flare.
And it's not even that, like, flashy. I'm just going through them.
No, but it was flashy for the time.
Yeah, that's
you know? But it's a couture collection because it disrupted the traditional silhouettes.
Oh, okay.
And it was, like, for them, in the 40s, it was like, oh, my God. You know, these skirts.
She has hips.
Oh, my God. You know, it was crazy for them. Some modern day... Actually, no, let's not go to modern day yet. Let's go to the 90s. My favorite run of couture collections of all time. Like, if you want to understand me as a human being, you watch these collections.
Just and in general, understanding you as a human being? Or
well, the like, the woman that I envision myself as I sit here in my hoops and my Fashion Nova two-piece. Yes, Thierry Mugler's haute couture collections from 1992 to 1996 are, to me personally, some of the most important collections in all of fashion history. And I...
Can you give us some highlights? Why was it so, you know, defining for you?
If you look at those collections, like, so let me give you an example. This suit with the sheer corset. You see this shit to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
Mugler, and for the people, for the uninitiated who aren't Mugler stans, Thierry Mugler, the namesake brand, and Mugler as it currently exists right now, are two different brands. So once Thierry retired and he handed over the reins to Casey Caldwater, who is the current head of Mugler, he basically took his namesake and said, go crazy. And basically everything Casey Caldwater has done that has been commercially and, like, socially praised has been a reference back to what Thierry Mugler did in this 5-year streak. So, like, you can see, like, you remember the picture of Bella Hadid wearing this? It's the same exact thing.
Yeah.
And Thierry Mugler's haute couture collections are characterized by being very costumey. So you have, like, the cyborg bodysuit, the oyster dress that Cardi B recently worn to at the not recently, maybe it was like 2 years ago, that she wore to the Grammys. Essentially, if you are an artist or a celebrity and you want to be considered like a fashion girl, you either pull a Thierry Mugler haute couture piece or you pull a Jean-Paul Gaultier haute couture piece or you pull a McQueen. But bitches really cannot pull off McQueen, so they don't really pull McQueen like that because McQueen was a designer who wanted to intimidate people. He wanted women to be scary. And you also, he's one of my favorite couture designers ever, RIP. He wanted women to be very intimidating, but also sexy. So he wanted to, like, scare the girls, give these motherfuckers boners. And he did that. He made women, and this is also one of my favorite aspects of Mugler, too. They made women into otherworldly beings.
Okay.
Which is why, like, for me, these collections really hit on, like, an emotional level because it's, like, you have women in traditional suiting, but she has fucking spikes coming out of her back. Mm-hmm. Or she has, you know, dominatrix whips and shit, mm-hmm. and complete latex leggings and all of that stuff. So I always liked the mix of glamour and danger that those two designers in particular used to infuse in their collections, which is why they were very important to me. But if you want an example of a modern couturier, mm-hmm. and one that also uses technology very well, mm-hmm. that would be Iris van Herpen.
Okay.
I think she is one of the most important designers of this past century.
Century's 100.
Iris van Herpen is known basically for 3D printing dresses.
Okay.
And you have to watch the shows. Like, you can't watch stills of the looks. You have to watch the shows because the way that she prints them, or I don't even know mm-hmm. the type of technology she uses, but it literally looks like the models are walking underwater. Like, the way that the frills and gills of the dress move, and, like, she incorporates, like, she calculates the fucking wind pattern, so, mm. like, when the models are walking and the wind is generating and resisting against them, she'll have fucking dingly-dangly bops, like, move accordingly to the wind patterns, and a lot of her stuff is 3D printed, and she'll have motifs of, like, underwater creatures, or, like, fucking amoebas.
No, I got you.
Mm-hmm. Birds of paradise, so a lot of her collections have like this really earthy feel to it. Mm-hmm. So not as forceful and intimidating as like a Mugler or an Alexander McQueen, but powerful in its own right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's if you want like an example of a very good modern day couture collection, I would look into Iris.
So I have a question then. Are there any any black couture? Oh, I'm sorry. What's the term again?
Couturiers.
That we want to get.
We're saying that wrong. Y'all know what we mean.
All good intention, man. we trying, but yeah. Any black couturiers?
So there are, and a lot of them have been lost to history.
Of course.
Obviously, because as black designers and creatives, like, our stories are just not told, and, you know, institutionally we are shut out of this industry. But there are some, and we should uplift those that do exist. One of the first being Anne Lowe. She was a dressmaker her designs were basically elevated her to the status of couturier, where she never had a house, but she did all of the practical sewing methods and design methods that did qualify her as a couturier. And she actually designed Jackie Kennedy's wedding dress. Oh, and wow, she is responsible for responsible for why, like, Jackie Kennedy is considered a fashion icon.
Oh, she blew her up.
Yeah.
Always.
And she, Anne Lowe actually won the Couturier of the Year award.
And she was awarded? What year?
1961.
Word?
Yeah. And, you know.
Civil rights actress passed?
Yeah. And, like, of course, like a lot of stories of black creatives, particularly in the fashion industry, despite the fact that she was treasured and heralded and was able to win this award, she actually went bankrupt and had to close down her storefront. I believe it was in the 70s. And, you know, it's just like another tragic example of how black creatives can accomplish these, you know, they can reach these accomplishments and, you know, break through the glass ceilings, but they're still not respected and compensated as much as their white counterparts, because it's crazy the fact that she won this award but still had issues maintaining her businesses.
Exactly.
Yeah, but definitely look into Anne Lowe if you are interested in, like, the 60s aesthetics. And so there are other black designers that are included on that associates list. Guest members, not associates. Yeah, there are other black designers that are included in the guest list, mm-hmm. including the one of the partners from Bottega.
Like butter.
Okay. So, Rashmi Bottega.
Butter. I'm just going to assume. Rashmi Bottega. I'm just going to put a fake French accent on it and, you know, call it a day.
Yeah. So, they're included in the guest members. So, technically, he would be considered a couturier.
Okay.
And then Grace Wales Bonner from Wales Bonners is also a guest member. So, she would be considered one as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, it's still a lot to, you know, diversity needs to penetrate that, but you know, what can we assume if there's only 4,000 people shopping? Of course, they're going to be exclusive to not wanting, you know, blacks allowed, but that's a different topic.
Well, I mean, there are black designers that, well, now that I'm trying to honestly think of it, of a black designer that currently would create something or their aesthetic would align with the couture aesthetic.
Nobody really, yeah.
Because a lot of this might be like
you can cut it
spicy
out.
Take. Well, it's not a spicy take. It just might be I don't know of them yet. A lot of black designers are more minimalist, and streetwear focused. I mean, obviously there are exceptions, but a lot of where we excel is in the lane that we created.
Right.
So it makes sense. Like, so, you know, Telfair Clemens might pop out with a couture collection and he might redefine
down
couture.
The line, yeah.
Shane Oliver from Hood by Air. I could see, because, I could see. If Margiela is considered, you know, on that second tier, Hood by Air definitely needs to be considered on that second tier.
Mm-hmm.
Hanifa, even though she does more of, like,
resort fashion.
No, she does like resort wear, I would describe. She's more of like you know you're familiar with Jacquemus.
Yeah.
They're known for their mini bags, but they do a lot of like French Riviera vacation aesthetics. Okay. Hanifa does that as well, but she does the designs that she has include like, so we didn't get into it. There's like technical ways you create folds and hand sew things. It gets really into the weeds, like the actual techniques of designing and creating these clothes. I omitted that because it kind of gets boring and I don't have a sewing machine, so I can't show you. But the way Hanifa designs some of her clothes, I could see it apply to a couture collection if she ever wanted to do that, if she wanted to do something on a bigger scale. So there are black designers that have the technical skills to do it. It's just, it's that structure. It's that, it's the culture. It's like, I don't even want to call, like, there's the industry and then there's the culture of couture. There are, institutionally, we're not included in that.
It's harder to get in than Illuminati.
No one's French Nana was teaching black designers how to do that from the age of 5. So while it would be interesting, it would have to be a situation where a black designer was, If it is to happen, I can see it happen as a black designer being appointed as the head of a traditional couture house and then presenting a collection underneath that house, as opposed to like
actually starting from the bottom with the knowledge and stuff.
Yeah, or like the Federation of AA, including Telfar. As one of their, you know?
Yeah. I was like, what?
You know what I'm saying? Like, they would have to, I could see a black designer being ingrained into another house and then being accepted before they just take a black fashion house and allow them to have that status. But then again, you know, I could be completely wrong, because there could have been a black fashion house that was in the Federation and then got scrubbed from history.
True.
Who knows? Who knows?
Maybe you could double back and see if it happens.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely gonna be, you know, if we find out that any of this information is wrong in post, we will be submitting apology iMessage notes on our Instagram. So no, be prepared to see that.
Not the iMessage notes.
Yeah, the iMessage press notice. I'll do it.
We don't got PR, so that's what we got.
We're our own PR, unfortunately.
Excuse me. So, I mean, I guess we can wrap up the topic or...
Yeah. I think that's going to be the end of our first deep dive episode.
Yeah, I hope people follow along. I definitely learned a lot.
Fall asleep, honestly.
Well, you know, that's part of it. You gotta be able to this. You know, we started this as a podcast of learning, and part of inclusion is being able to learn about what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, I don't know anything. So it was just important that, you know, I was able to, you know, give me a lesson.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed actually going in and doing the research and like revisiting some of my collections. Exactly.
And then you learn just by doing that. And then boom, we still, you know, continue to pass on the knowledge. And, you know, we record on a podcast, maybe 10 years, somebody comes back and, oh, what's a couture house or what is that? And they listen to little old me, little old you. And they're like, oh. Wow, there are some smart people, except that guy. But, I mean, she knew what she was talking about. And, yeah. But thank you so much, Noel, about that. I learned a lot, like I said. I hope people listening and learned a lot. Yeah, I think that was a good episode. So,
sure. So, of course, we have to plug our socials.
Please, please, please.
The podcast page on Instagram is Sample Size Pod. And then on Twitter, it's Sample Size Pod.
Yep, mm-hmm. Sample Size Pod.
We definitely know our social media handles.
It's and complicated.
If you want to check out our bios or any references and sources that we use for this episode, check out samplesizepodcast.com.
Yeah, that's where we're going to put the information to, you know, certify that.
Yeah, so you guys can, like, start your own little deep dives for sure.
Yeah.
And then my handles are Yano with 2 E's on Twitter. And yeah, no, with 1 E on Instagram. Yes, I did have to think about it for a second. Also, yeah, no, with 1 E on TikTok.
Yeah, if you guys want to follow me on Instagram, my username is Tone, T-O-N-E, a period. Bone, but with the first zero spell. I mean, the first letter O is actually a zero, so Tone, period, B, letters, the number zero, N-E, I can't talk. And then on Twitter, it's the same thing, but instead of a period, it's an underscore. Yeah, make sure you give us a follow if you like the episode, and don't forget to rate and review us in wherever you listen to this to tell us what you liked and what you didn't like about the episode. We're always interested, and you can always reach out via email, right? It's contact@samplesizepodcast.com. Yeah, there we go. So it's contact@samplesizepodcast.com. For any questions, anything you want to know, we're very interested, you know, to hear if you guys learned anything. So let us know. So
if you have any favorite couture collections, let us know on Twitter.